Friday, March 22nd, I woke late with Linda close by in the next bed, and the first thing I was aware of was the tree outside of the window was still. The wind has laid. The sky was still gray. The 2 days of stormy weather that kept Linda from coming were past, and when I had coffee on the little porch downstairs, Beth and Noble assured me that the sun would soon be out. I am like a miser, counting my little stack of hours, painfully aware that half of them are gone, but gloating over those that remain, and Linda is here to spend them with. At 11 o'clock, we left for Cruz Bay and boarded the Keneal Bay Mary with Captain Smith for a day of island hopping. Our destination, Norman Island, in the British Virgins, and our route leading us through Sir Francis Drake's Passage, past Big Tatch and Little Tatch and Tortola. We've certainly covered a lot of the same ground, Sir Francis and I, widely separated from Point Reyes, California, to the Virgin Islands in the Caribbean. Soon the sun came out, and it was a day of white sails and blue water, with Linda Bird and I lying on deck, getting a suntan, and the pelicans and seagulls wheeling above us, making our way between the volcanic islands, where the surf whitened on the rocky shore. It was the time for the century plants to bloom. They are 15, even 20 feet tall. Now they are turning yellow, like a giant candelabra. There were huge pipe organ cactus, and some that looked like a devil's pincushion with a red raised center. Desert plants and jungle growth side by side, cactus and mango trees, are one thing that amazed me. Another is the absence of man. He's here, but he's only really brushed it, these islands. Occasionally we saw the stone ruins of an old sugar mill, and occasionally a house on a white crescent beach or high up on the cliffs. Past noon, we reached a Norman Island, got our snorkeling gear, lowered the dinghy, Noble and Bess and I paddled over to the caves. These were supposed to have been used in the days of the pirates to hide treasure in. And it's easy to imagine, as you glide into the cool darkness, that they might have hoisted a chest up onto some ledge where it would be out of sight. But the only treasure we saw was a most remarkable coloring of the rock. Golds and pinks and reds I was familiar with, and the green might have been from copper, but orchid I never saw before. Sort of a garish, translucent orchid, a lavender. It was getting darker, and up ahead it was jet black, and we heard a bat screeching. So we turned and paddled out. In the sunshine, put on our snorkeling outfit and slipped over the edge. Into the world of enchantment. Great round domes of brain coral, spreading formations of the antler coral, and column coral like cathedral spires, and here and there, sea fans waving in the water. Purple and green and greenish yellow. There were the denizens I knew well, the blue-headed wrasse, with its collar of blue and white and black around its neck. And the four-eyed butterfly fish. Noble told us its enemies think it's going to swim one way, and they see those eye-like spots on the tail, and it's really heading the other. The beautiful blue tang, often four or five of them together. The repulsive lizard fish that looked like a serpent lying on the bottom, but when you approach him, flashes away with surprising speed. Norman says he can't swim far, though. An angelfish in many varieties. The queen angel, loveliest of all. Green and blue and yellow, almost phosphorescent. And the French angel in his black and yellow convict stripe. And the little Jewish fish, midnight blue, with tiny spots of brilliant blue, almost like phosphorescent lights. Suddenly Jerry pointed down, and there on the floor of the ocean was what appeared to be a big old pot. Probably iron and overgrown with moss. No doubt dropped there from some pirate ship. Noble swam down and touched it. It was quite soft and malleable in his hands. He surfaced and said that was a basket sponge. So much for the frame of mind of looking for pirate treasure. Saw a lot of sergeant majors following each other in formation, their stripes making them the easiest to recognize. Parrotfish swam by in every hue of blue and green and yellow, appearing to be almost 2 feet long, some of them, though distances are very deceptive underwater. You have only to look at your neighbor's foot or your own hand. As we swam over the coral formations, we all looked for sea urchin. one of the few dangerous things in these beautiful waters. Their long black spines capable of inflicting very severe pain. Though Norman could swim down under, scoop one up with his hand, holding it safely underneath, and you could watch it walk very slowly on its bottom spines, progressing across his hand. Once close to the coral reef, I saw the most outrageous-looking fish, a puffer, quite bloated and angry-looking, and most amusing. And several times, the goatfish, collared with a fringe of pinkish-red spines. When we were tired, we climbed up onto the Caneel Bay Mary and had our lunch. An enormous assortment of roast beef and cottage cheese, delicious watermelon rind preserves, turkey and crab meat and shrimp, and lots of fruit. And pound cake, which must be one of the specialties of the Rockefeller cuisine. Linda remembered it from Jackson Lodge. I've done everything here I wanted to, except lose weight. Whenever I raised my eyes to these volcanic hills, I was appalled at the audacity of man in trying to turn them into sugarcane plantations. They are so steep and rocky, and mostly so thickly wooded, although it's all second growth. Only a few big trees, like kapok and banyan, were left when the slaves cleared the slopes and built the rock terraces. I asked Captain Smith what he remembered. He told us that one mill was still in operation when he was a boy. He's 77. He said he went to work for 20 cents a day, and everybody worked hard. But he said there was lots more rain then. I wonder if it's true. And everything you planted grew. After lunch, we started up again. We were going to completely circle St. John's Island. We stopped at Reef Bay for some more snorkeling. A great wide circle of white sand. There were four people sitting on the beach. We slipped into the water and looked down. Here it was quite shallow. The water below me dappled with sunshine, with a beautiful white sandy bottom, rippled by the waves. Once up close to the rocks, we saw a school of yellow grunt, hundreds and hundreds of little yellow fish that I swam right among, though I didn't never touched one. And once I saw three fish that were as transparent as egg white, thin and long, with only their head and eyes clearly marked. Here there was grass on the floor of the ocean, but it looked like grass waving in a meadow, and not at all like the huge gorgonian around Norman Island or Cinnamon Bay or Turtle, which looked like huge bushes of tubular fronds, but was really made out of tiny animals. Nowhere today had I seen anything as big as the pompano, thin, spade-tailed, that had swum along beside me on my first day in. It looked about 3 feet long and 2 feet across, and was probably two-thirds that big. And close to the rocks this morning, I had seen quite a few large fish, yellow, apparently 2 feet long, which Norman had told me were baby jewfish. I got tired and walked out on the lovely white sand, very soft to my feet. Bess went over to talk to the people on the beach. Later she told me that there was a couple who worked for Vista, running a Head Start school. We landed back at Cruz Bay, bounced home in the Jeep along the Corniche Road, and walked under the bougainvillea at the Rockefeller's house as the sun was getting low. I got a good tall drink and went up to Linda Bird's room. She stretched out on her bed. And we talked and talked for fully 2 hours, watching the sun sink behind St. Thomas's and the heavens fill with a bank of gray clouds. The last rays of the sun turned them pink. And for a glorious half hour, we watched them fade. And the great, brilliant evening star came out. It's brighter here than any place I remember. It was the longest, best talk I've had with Linda in years, about her job, her future, George, the problems of marriage, his career and military service, very much about herself. It was after 7 when we went down to dinner, just the 3 of us. This is perfect, just right, for a time, and no other way would I see so much of Linda. Another time, I'd like to come here with 3 or 4 couples. Somebody for me to play bridge with and walk through the woods with, and soft-spoken, sweet-natured people for Lyndon. After dinner, Linda went walking with Mike, and I went to bed with my book on Tom Wolfe, Look Homeward, Angel. I had finished The Reavers with a completely new feeling about William Faulkner, his talent still gloriously intact, but expanded to include humor and wholesome people. I had dipped into A Girl Like I by Anita Loos, but found it too brittle and light. The moon was full and the setting perfect. I could ask no more of my days here, unless it were Lyndon, and only then if he enjoyed it as much as I do.